real tickled when I hear me being a spiritual speaker. And there's a story that I can't share from the podium behind that. But the one that I can share is my sponsor assures me that I'm no more spiritual than anybody else in this room, and I need to know that. She said, most of the time you're Sunday morning because that's the way your flights fall. You know, and that kind of put me in my place. My name is Sandy Hickox, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Sandy.
Good morning. I want to thank the committee for asking me to come out here, and I always get so nervous before I talk. I just shake in my shoes. And, you know, I've heard a lot of different little words about all that, too. But today I know it's fear. Because, you know, I'm scared for you to really know who I am. And after I share, you really going to know who I am, who I was, who I am today. And I promise you it's not who I want to be. And it's not who I want you to think I am. And in lies the reason I drank, for the most part. You know, as we travel around this fellowship, and as we just go to meetings, we meet some people that just find a place in our heart, and they just stay. And there's some people here this weekend that have found that place in my heart, and I'm forever grateful. You know, because I know that they love me no matter what. You know, and that's what I look for all my life, somebody just to love me no matter what. And it's good to see Wendy and Regina. You know, they are people that I have met on this path, and they're in this room again this morning. And that says a lot, not for me, but for the program. You know, I'm a crier, and if that bothers you, you can get up and leave now because you've been warned. I'm serious. I mean, I have my feelings back today. I don't have to hide them, and I can just be who I am, and that's the gift of my sobriety. I am going to have to leave right after I finish my talk because my flight is like at 1:10 and all that kind of stuff, so I don't want to seem like I'm rude. And June, thank you for that little bit of... She said, you need to tell them so they won't think you're just rude. Now, well, she didn't say rude, but you need to let everybody know if you can remember it. So I done it first so I wouldn't forget it. And my head's like that. You know, I didn't come to AA to get sober. I didn't even know I was coming to AA. I was in some trouble, and a guy said, I know how you can get your job back. And I said, sign me up. And they signed me up for treatment. You know, and I guess I'd been living under a rock because I'd never heard of treatment before. And this guy that told me that, he had been off somewhere. We used to drink and party together. And, you know, I mean, he was just a lot of fun. And he went off somewhere and come back, and he was talking in half sentences. And we were worried about him. You know, we would ask him to go drinking with us. And he said, oh, I'm not drinking one day at a time. We'd say, okay, we'll see you tomorrow. You know, and we'd go on. You know, and we would be at work together, and something would happen. He said, you know, we just got to trust God, and everybody look at him funny. You know, my accent is not from Idaho; it is from Georgia. Me and my husband moved there about 6 years ago, so if I talk funny, that's why. But we would be, you know, and he would say, trust God, and we'd go, oh my gosh, that's where you went. He was in one of them church things, you know, and we just left him alone. But, you know, when I got in this trouble, here he comes, and he had my solution. He knew how I could get my job back, and he signed me up for treatment. And that next day, two old guys come in and knocking on my door. I mean, I knew them from work and stuff, but they sat in my living room, and they confessed. And I'm going, I don't need to know all this. You should have took this to your grave with you. Today I know they were trying to 12-step me, but back then I didn't know what they were doing. And they signed me up for treatment. And I didn't know you could go to treatment all messed up and drunk and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm like my first day at school. My pants are pressed, and I got my little suitcase packed, and I'm sitting out on the steps waiting. You know, and the AA guy and an Al-Anon woman carried me to treatment. And on the way down there, they got to talking, and I realized I might have made a mistake. You know, a little overreaction here. You know, but at one more time, I can do anything for a period of time just to get to what I want. And I knew I could play this game. And so here we go to treatment. And this Al-Anon lady is standing beside me. She's got her hand on my elbow because I'm looking like a rabbit about to run. And she's got a hold to me. And the AA guy goes and signs up all the paperwork and stuff. And you know, she carries me through a double doors, look like they're as long as this room is. And when we get down there, she opens the door and shoves me in and closes the door, which is not a bad deal, except there wasn't no handles on my side. You know, there was a window in that door, and I'm up there, and I'm looking at the window, and I'm scared. You know, and I'm crying real tears here. I mean, I've faked them before, but these are real. And I don't cry pretty. I blow snot everywhere, and my cheeks puff up, and eyes get red, and makeup runs. I mean, I look bad. You know, and I'm up there against that window. I mean, I'm like a dog in the window, and if this woman looks back, I got her. You know, that heifer went all the way down that walk and never did look back. I hated Al-Anon. In this treatment center, I found out that the reason I drank wasn't because my mama raised four of us by herself. I found out that the reason I drank wasn't because things that happened to me. I found out that the reason I drank wasn't any of the things that I thought it was going to be. And I found out an alcoholic wasn't some old man in pissy pants sucking on a wine bottle outside the bar. You know, that's what I found out. And I'm grateful for that information. And I took a look at my life for the first time ever. And I realized, you know, that I had a brother, well, I still have a brother right up under me, and he is just perfect. You know, y'all know the one. And I tried my best to kill him coming up, but I didn't succeed, obviously. And, you know, and I hated him. I mean, I hated him. And today I know the reason I hated him is because I was jealous of him. I had a brother older than me that was a father figure in my house, and I tried everything to get his attention. And I don't feel like I ever succeeded. And today I know because it didn't come wrapped up in the box that I thought, you know, I thought he didn't love me, and today I know that's not true. I found out that my mama wasn't the reason I did all the things I did, you know, because she was my enemy. If she hadn't have done a lot of the things that she done, I would be all right, you know. And she worked in the cotton mills in the South and raised four of us by herself, and she was more interested in putting food on the table than she was in how the curtains looked or if we even had curtains, you know. And I hated her for all that. You know, because I just knew if she was different, I would be different. I knew if they were different, I would be different. And, you know, today I know none of that's true. I had my first drink when I was 13, and I'm going to tell you, I found the magic. And I come out of the chute 6 foot tall, and I, you know, when you're 50 and 6 foot tall, it's cool. But when you're like 8, 9 and 6 foot tall, it's ridiculous. You know, because nothing fits, and, you know, you're always in the back of the line and people are always poking fun at you, and I just hated it. And that's when I had that drink, that very first drink, it made me short. It made me short. It made me have that girl weight. I had 10 pounds here and 10 pounds here. And up to that point, I had no poundage, you know. Gosh. I had that disease of perception. And it made my tongue lay down, and I could talk to the boys like a boy, because up until that time, I always run with a big pack of boys. I mean, you can't chase me nowhere with a bug, and I can make a Coca-Cola can dance with a pistol, and I can gut my own fish and skin my own squirrel, all that kind of stuff. But you're talking about putting on makeup now, we're talking a whole different level of fear. And that's what I brought to y'all. I'm in this treatment center, and I took a look at that, and I always thought that girl part of my brain just wasn't developed because I didn't know how to do those things. And today I understand that I wasn't taught those things. And I used to, you know, that was just the reason I drank. I drank, I lived with a guy, and he would, you know, we would start drinking, and we would get in a fight, and I'd wake up and come to the next morning and find out I lost. You know, and I used to drink a lot behind those bruises, and I found out in that first inventory that I attempted in that treatment center that I used that abuse to my benefit. I mean, I could drink a week on a good bruise, and I had all kind of knights in white shining armor going to come and rescue me from that, you know, and I played that. I played it to the hilt. And I took a look at that in that treatment center. And, you know, and when I first got there, the lady come in, we're filling out paperwork, and I'm in some trouble, and I know if I confess, I'm going to go to prison, sure enough, and I'm not confessing to her. But, you know, I heard a couple of words she said, and she said, honey, you don't ever have to feel the way you feel inside ever again unless you choose to. You know, and I'd been feeling like crap most of my life, and I just told y'all some of that. And she said I didn't have to feel like that, you know, and for the first time I think I had some hope. And she said, all you got to do is do what we ask you to do. And I started to do that. And I'm not standing up here saying I done it perfect. I didn't. You know, but for the first time in my life, I started doing what was asking me to be done, and I started feeling a little bit different inside where I live. I was living with a man. I wasn't living with a man. I was being supported by a man that you would never see. And I had to make a choice, you know. I'm in this treatment center, and, you know, I can't keep doing the things I've always done, because if I do, I will not be able to stay sober over the guilt and the shame of that. And I had to let Money Man go. And I'm going to tell you, it's funny to me, the hardest thing I had to do at this phase of my development was, and at different parts in my sobriety, there have been different, you know, answers for that blank. And at this phase of my development, letting go of that Money Man was hard, because I was looking at going to prison. I'd got arrested for some things that helped me stay up after I'd been drinking all night. And they had me with possession with intent to distribute. And I couldn't, you know, I didn't want to tell them they're all mine. I wasn't sharing with nobody, you know. You know, and then I had some more stuff that I took after I'd been drinking all night and stayed up all day to help me sleep the next night. And they, same thing, you know, 2 counts with possession with intent to distribute. And that was back before getting busted was fashionable. And I was looking at some serious prison time because there was several pills in that bottle. And they didn't think too kindly of that. And, you know, and I got to let Money Man go. And I don't have a lawyer. And y'all telling me, you know, you got to trust God. Now, I have been in more churches than you can shake a stick at. I've been sprinkle dipped and dunked, and I've been, you know, all that kind of thing to come and get it like y'all got it. And it never worked for me, and I didn't understand. I thought I'd crossed that whatever line, you know, it was that I'd done that unforgivable whatever. I was scared. You know, I was really scared. And you told me that I could believe in the God that you believed in. You know, and I'm grateful for that because I didn't have one. And the one I had was an old idea. And so I'm up to this point. I've done an inventory. I'm looking at my part. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm trying to make some amends. And then cut Money Man go. And they said, well, you're ready to leave treatment, but we want you to go to this halfway house. I said, well, that's fine. Sign me up. You know, I'm want to keep this job. And the only thing wrong with that is they wanted to put me in a halfway house with all women. Now, in lies a problem. I don't know what you do with women. I know what you do with a big pack of boys. I mean, I've been doing that all my life. But what do you do with a bunch of girls? I don't have a clue. You know, I hated women. They were my problem. They were my enemy. They were, oh, you know, it was just bad. And today, through an inventory done at that time, I realized that I thought everybody was like me. And if they were like me, they wouldn't to be trusted. And I just thought all women were like that. I picked up some of my mother's ideas about women. Because she had been married 4 times and had problems with women taking her man or her man taking women or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And I just picked up some stuff that wasn't mine from her, some attitudes about women, and I was really scared. And they had some requirements in this halfway house. They wanted you to wear all your clothes, and up until that point, I mean, I'd quit wearing a lot of those clothes because, I mean, they got in the way. I mean, I would be drinking, we'd be in the car having a good time, and then everything get tangled up under the seatbelt, I mean, under the seat thing, and then I'm laughing, trying to get it untangled, and can't stand up because I'm drunk, and then I'd just say to hell with it, and then she'd find it, and he couldn't come out and play no more, you know, it was just ridiculous. So I just quit wearing a lot of that crap. And, so now I gotta start wearing it again, you know, and anytime I'm up here, you know, dressed up and looking halfway decent, I wanna remember that when I come to y'all, I didn't know what size underclothes I wore. And I know, too, that anytime I say, you know, to you, I need your help, and that you help me. You know, and that's what I asked those girls in this halfway house. You know, we had to travel in groups and had to go shopping in a bunch. And I had to confess to these women that I didn't have the articles of clothing that they wanted me to wear. And so they shoved me in a dressing room in this department store, and they started hauling panties across the floor to me, you know, so I could try them on and try to figure out my size. You know, today you can't do that, but back then you could. And, you know, I just don't ever want to forget, you know. And when I let my pride and my ego down and I ask you for help, I always get the help I need. And it might not necessarily be what I want, but I always get what I need. And, that's what y'all do for me. And that's what I've learned here. And those have been some hard lessons for me because I want to think I know it all, and I don't. You know, I want to think that I don't need you. And I do. And that's become very clear to me recently again. And maybe I'll talk about that. Get out of the halfway house, do my time there. And in this little town where I got sober and stuff, there wasn't a bunch of women staying in the room. So I asked this same Al-Anon lady, I'd forgiven her by now. And I asked this same Al-Anon lady, would she sponsor me? And you know what? She told me she would. So Al-Anon, my hat's off to you. You know, sometimes you help us drunk women and you don't even know that you do that. And this man and this woman, they double-teamed me. I mean, she taught me what women did in the daytime because I didn't have a clue. She taught me all that women's stuff that my mama didn't have. You know, she just didn't know. She didn't know to teach me, and this lady did. I mean, she looked like she walked off the pages of a catalog. And she showed me how to dress like that, and she showed me how to cook, and she showed me how to act with dignity and grace, you know. And that's what this Al-Anon lady did for me. And it really pisses me off when people badmouth Al-Anon people. You know, because y'all love us when nobody else does. And I'm going to get off that soapbox, okay? But it touches my heart, and y'all touch my heart. And sometimes when I listen at these things, Al-Anon lady or the Al-Anon speaker is the most step-oriented talk you'll hear the whole weekend, and the room's sit empty a lot of times. And y'all just miss out. You know, you just miss out. And this Al-Anon lady, she just saved my life. And, you know, at this time I'm going to meetings. And back then, there wasn't a meeting every night of the week and all this kind of stuff. So we'd get in whoever had the biggest car, and we'd drive 45 minutes. And we traveled all halfway over the state, you know, trying to do a meeting every night. And we had so much fun in the car. You know, we'd have the meeting going, we'd have the meeting there, and then we'd have the meeting coming home. You know, and that's where I ask all those questions that I didn't want you to know that I didn't understand or didn't know the answer to. I mean, you know, because, I mean, we just had a ball. I mean, you could just let down the windows and see the smoke coming out because everybody smoked back then. And I mean, it was just wonderful. And that's when, you know, then we'd get home and we'd put on a coffee and we'd talk about God and spiritual things and AA and that sick newcomer. And we'd stay till 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and that's how we did it, one day at a time. Me and this one particular guy, we started looking at each other and batting eyes at each other. And one time he accidentally touched my hand. It was like electric shock. I couldn't believe it, you know. I'd never felt anything like that. And I'm in the garden with this Al-Anon lady, and I'm telling her, you know, this guy, because he ain't tried to grab nothing that wasn't his. He hadn't tried to kiss me, none of that kind of stuff. And I didn't understand it. You know, so I helped this Al-Anon lady with the garden, and we're in there, and we're digging taters, and I'm slinging dirt, and I'm cussing, because, I mean, after all, I'm sober now, and I've cleaned up. I'm like 4 months sober or something. I cleaned up, and, you know, how come he don't want me, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, she said, honey, maybe he just respects you. Well, respect, that's when they've been with you one night and come back the next day. That's respect, and that's what I was wanting. That's what I brought to y'all. Me and this guy got married, and, you know, the Al-Anon ladies, we had $50 to do our wedding and the reception, the whole nine yards. And I gave that Al-Anon lady that money, and we had the most beautiful wedding and the most beautiful reception. Because I'm telling you, you know, we'd go all over everywhere. Everybody knew us. Everybody, you know, we were like the AA couple because we were in the steps. We were working with people. I mean, we were doing the deal, and everybody pitched in for that wedding. Everybody. It wasn't just the Al-Anon ladies, but I'm going to tell you, one of those Al-Anon ladies just baked the most beautiful cake you'd ever seen in your life. And one more time, that's what y'all do for me. You know, when I'm willing to help myself, I am amazed where that help comes from. And the lady that cooked the cake didn't even know me. You know, she used to go to meetings, but, you know, she was elderly and stuff, and she just didn't get out anymore, but she cooked that cake. In that wedding ceremony, my oldest brother walked me down the aisle. Now, that don't seem like much, but there was a time in my drinking, he come down to New Orleans, Louisiana, and I was selling myself on the streets, and he disowned me right there. And y'all know that look that we get from those family members who just don't know what to do with us anymore. There's so much shame and disgust in their eyes, and it just, and I could be in the room with him, and it was like he was looking through a piece of glass. He didn't even see me. You know, because of the amends process that I've done here, you know, he walked me down the aisle. You know, that's what y'all give me. I don't ever want to forget that. I found out, you know, that the brother that I think is so smart and all that kind of stuff, you know, I was jealous of him, and I told him that. And today he's one of my best friends. You know, that's what you give me. That marriage didn't last. We walk off in the sunset and burned up. And today I know. Today I know it's because I wasn't honest. And at that phase of my development, you know, I'm kind of like Tarzan going through the trees. I won't let go of a vine unless I got a firm grip on another one, and that's what happened. And that's as good as I can clean that one up. And then I come home from that little event, and get a divorce, and everybody in the meetings took sides. We were a small meeting. There was probably 10 people total. That's on a birthday night. And everybody took sides, and I'm the whore in the meeting. And I'm going to tell you, it's a hard way to walk. I couldn't go back to the place where I was safe anymore. And, you know, I know that I've done wrong. I know that. But I also got to remember, too, that, you know, there's sick people here. And I'm grateful for the program of Narcotics Anonymous, because that's where I got recovery for a period of time, until I was able to get back in those meetings. And 5 years sober, drinking's not an option, but blowing my brains out is. And there's this old guy that would come to the meetings where I was, and everybody hated him because he'd tell you the truth. And he told me one time that he wanted me sober more than he wanted to get in my pants, and I was offended. He loved me that much. I didn't understand that kind of love. I really did not understand that kind of love, but y'all taught me that. This guy, I mean, we used to go to meetings just to watch who had hit him. You know, I mean, it wasn't kind and loving like everybody is here. I mean, he taught me principles before personalities. He taught me to fight for my seat. He taught me how to pray. I would pray every meeting, every night at the meeting, that he would have a wreck and die on the way there. Because I hated him, because he'd get in my face, and, you know, if I gave him my opinion, boy, he'd cut me to shreds. And any time I shared my experience, it was totally different. But, you know, today I know that he respected Alcoholics Anonymous and wanted to keep it what it is. And I am forever grateful for that. And he didn't care about my little feelings. He had rather see me sober than liking him. And I used to call him my SOB. And that wouldn't stand for sweet old Bob like it does today, you know. And I'm grateful for him, because that day when I'm 5 years sober and I want to blow my brains out, I know that he has solution for me. And I picked up the phone and called him. And, you know, when I was swinging on this other vine, he was the first one to say, you know, you're really screwing up with that. So, I mean, man, Sponce is out of here every time, you know, at this phase of my development. And I just told him to, you know, get lost in a kind, loving way. And I, you know, if you give me 5 minutes, I'd tell you what an SOB he was and how bad he treated me and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, on that day, he didn't say, you know, Sandy, you remember that day you said? He didn't say, you know, tough luck, honey. You know, he said, get in the car, you know. And here, when I went over to his house, I just fell in his arms. And he saved me that day. He put me in the, him and his wife were taping the, you know, some conferences in the Southeast, and they let me travel with them, and they paid for my room because I didn't have a job. I mean, I had a job, but I was barely making ends meet, and he paid for my room, and he let me go behind the tape table with him and work with him. And, you know, I heard speakers from California talking about being divorced and sitting in the rooms with, you know, ex-wives and ex-husbands and stuff. And I guarantee I talked to those people after the meeting. And I found out the principle before personality means just that. The principle of Alcoholics Anonymous is an alcoholic, not a husband, not a doctor, not a lawyer, not a girlfriend, not a boyfriend. It's an alcoholic first. And that man had just as much right to be in those meetings as I did. Even though I didn't like seeing him there, I had no right to tell him he couldn't come there. You know, and I had tried to do that. And, you know, today I see that so different. I'm just so prideful and so egotistical and so selfish. You know, and I remember the first day that we were in the same room together. It was at a district meeting, and a hush fell over that room like you wouldn't believe, because I hadn't seen him around. And carry the message, let it begin with me. I got up out of my seat and walked over to him, and I stuck out my hand and I said, I'm glad you're here. I did not say I was glad to see him there, because obviously I was not. But, you know, after I did that, you know, the noise in the room picked up, the tension just lifted out of that room, and everybody walked out of there free, mostly me. You know, and today, you know, that's just what I did. You know, and I could sit in the meetings free, because, you know, I got to know this is my life. I don't have a choice where I can come here or not. This is the last stop for me, and this has given me a life like I had not ever dreamed. And I got to be real careful, because my head will take me out of these rooms so fast. And I've had another experience with that, and I still need to keep coming back. It wasn't long after that I figured that my problem is I don't have kids. You know, down south, if you don't have children, they'll ask you why. And I knew a guy that had a couple, so I got married, and here we go again. And I made their business my business, and of course that didn't work. And it wasn't long I was divorced again, but this time I didn't have to swing out on another vine. This time I walked out with some dignity and grace. And you know, and I grow so slow. You know, I found out that men are not my answer. I thought for a long time they are, and it's been an old idea that's died real hard with me, and it's carried me through a lot of pain. And I think I'm better because of it. I can tell you that today, but at that phase of my development, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do. And And this nosy neighbor met me at the gas pumps one day, and she said, "I know somebody you need to meet." I said, "Get back, Jack. I am done with men." You know, I'd been married a couple of times. I just don't know how to do relationships. The way I do them is I'm a kicking, screaming two-year-old. I want everything now. I want it all mine. I don't want to share. And that's just it. And you can't have a kind loving relationship on those terms. And I found that out. About the same time, this old guy had sponsored me many years, and I was rough and gruff like him, and I knew that wasn't working, and I mean, it was working, but I knew I needed something different, so I started asking God for a woman sponsor, and I would go to my meetings to pick up my messages from God, you know, and I'd get a phone number, and I'd call them, "Oh no, I don't want to sponsor you," and I guess my reputation preceded me on that, and at least that's what my head told me, and you know, there's a lot of people with time that don't sponsor women in the area where I was from at that time, and it bothered me. You know, I was told no a lot, and I just kept praying, you know, and I got a tape in the mail, and this lady said her first and last name from the podium, and she said, I heard on that she said she was at a place in her sobriety where she knew she had to get in AA or get out, and I knew I was there. And Bob told me one time, he said, "Honey, there's two bottoms you're going to hit in sobriety. There's the one that brings you here, and there's the one that keeps you here." And I kind of understand that today. And I was at that bottom that was going to hopefully keep me here. I was willing to do anything. And this lady was talking to me on the phone, and she said, "How many meetings are you going to a week?" And I said, "One." And I couldn't tell her out loud, you know, about that. I mean, those other meetings in the area where those people took his side, I can't go there because I cussed them all out. I mean, I stood up in a chair, not in a chair, but I stood up and I screamed at everybody, you know, take it and shove it and kind of, sort of. And I mean, I was a lot worse than that. I mean, I was like my drunk days, and, you know, and I stormed out and have yet to return. At this phase of my development, she said, "Well, that's going to change." And I'm going, "Yeah, whatever." Out loud to her, I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "We're going to go through the big book." I said, I've been in a big book meeting since I've been sober. My God, I'm one of the big book thumbers in our area. You know, out loud to her, I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "People I sponsor wear a dress to the meeting." I go, "Oh, hell, a dress?" In my head, a dress. I think I got one that you bury folks with in the closet and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, out loud to her, I go, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "It's not about you. It's about being an example for the newcomer coming in. You got to show them a place where they can go." And I didn't understand that. You know, I thought you were supposed to be comfortable at your meetings, you know, and it's okay to stop by a meeting on the way back from working out, you know, sweat dripping everywhere. And no, not with her. And she said, "We're going to set up a call time convenient to me." In my head, I'm going, "I am asking you to be my sponsor. Convenient to you? You're supposed to be available to me 24/7. What are you talking about, convenient to you?" Out loud to her, I said, "Of course, yes, ma'am." And she said, "Sandy, your time with me is important. I don't want to miss it. I don't want you catching me on the run or me trying to catch you on the run," because she is busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. She's one of the busiest women I know. And if I run all day, I'll never touch what she does. And I said, "Yes, ma'am," to her. And that lady sponsors me today. She sponsored me a year and a half before she ever met me. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in action. It was a long distance deal that didn't work for a lot of people. It has worked very well for me. I have been committed to that relationship. We went through the big book over the phone. I done my third step over the phone. I done my fifth step over the phone. I talked to her about the amends over the phone. And I have changed. I have changed. I've softened up. I have become a woman I never knew was in me, and it's through her guidance, you know. I had an opportunity to go out to a Christmas party that she does every year, and I had the honor of sitting in the meeting with probably like 40 sober women. I mean, none of them cussing, none of them they were dressed like women with respect and dignity, you know, and I had just not seen that kind of example in my area. Debbie, she told me, she said, "About time you become one," you know, and so I started doing that. Now, I went from sponsoring nobody to sponsoring like 10 women all at one time, and she sponsored me through that. You know, I'm always amazed, you know, when we're willing to go to any length, how many people reach out. you know, I have got sober sisters all over the country, and I have been at work in different areas, and these women have taken time out of their day to come and get me and carry me to a meeting or show me the city where I was. And, you know, and I just can't believe that they would do that for me, you know. It just honors me to know those women, and that's what I became a part of. And me and Wendell, this is the guy that the nosy neighbor introduced me to. You know, we started dating and stuff, and I really liked him. He is the nice guy that I run from all my life, because I knew way down deep in my heart I wasn't good enough. And that was slowly changing through this process, and I knew that if I didn't do something different, there was going to be another string of dead bodies, and I didn't want that with him. You know, so I'd done an inventory, like I'd never done an inventory on my relationships, and that's where I found out. I'm a kicking, screaming 2-year-old, want everything my way, and, you know, and I asked God to take me to someplace different with that. And he has. You know, my husband is one of the most kind, loving men that I'll ever meet. I mean, he supports me in doing this. He sits home a lot of times by himself. He's like the bus driver for the girls. You know, when we want to go somewhere, it's usually Wendell and a bunch of women, because I sponsor a lot of girls. And you know, and they have shown him what a kind, loving man is about, because some of them have never known one. A lot of them have come from abusive relationships and stuff. We were going to a conference with a girl I was sponsoring one time, and Wendell would open her door and she would slam it shut, and he would try to open again, she'd slam it shut. He said, "Stop it, I'm opening the door for you." She's never had a man open the door for her. And that's my Wendell. You know, he does that. You know, and he's a safe man for some of these women. I mean, and I am so honored with that. Me and Wendell got married, and when he asked me to marry him, you know, after this inventory, you know, we hadn't seen each other for a couple of months, and he called me that day, and it was funny. I woke up that morning, and I knew that I knew, and he called me that same day. And he said, "I need to talk to you." I said, "Yeah, I need to talk to you too." And we've been together since. He asked me to marry him. I told him I'd marry him one day at a time. I said, "I have been married forever, 3 times. I'm not doing that again." And he agreed to that. And one day at a time, I said, "And AA's first." And that's non-negotiable. And I wasn't being a smart aleck about that. I was being, this is my life. I know better than any of y'all that this is my life. And if I don't put it first, I won't stay here. And if I don't stay here, I'm going to die. And I know that. I have that knowledge way down deep where I live. And I'm grateful that I have that, because I see a lot of people coming in and out and they don't have that. And I think that's the reason they don't stay. Me and Wendell got married and started this journey. And, you know, I'm real spiritual as long as the money's there. Wendell had a good job. We had all kind of toys, all that kind of stuff. And then he got laid off after 23 years, union attrition. You know, somebody with some more seniority than him took his job. And there we go. And my sponsor said, "You got to go to the meeting and tell them." I said, "I'm not telling them." I am not telling them, because I was the one that would take you to the meeting. I was the one that would have you up to dinner over at my house. I was the one that I would buy you the big book if you didn't have one. You know, and now I don't have that money. And now I got to go tell you I don't have that money. And I got to ask you for a ride. Ask you. You know, to help me out here. And I'm going to tell you, that was the hardest thing I ever had to do at that phase of my development, you know. And you know what? I didn't have to get drunk behind that. My sponsor showed me how to line up the clothes in my closet, because I like to buy new stuff. She said, "You just need to rearrange your closet where everything's in there." And that's what we did. And every day I had a new outfit that I didn't know I had, you know. And my sponsor guided me through that, you know. And I sit in the meetings and I would talk about, you know, "Yeah, the bank's coming to get the car today. We got it washed and filled up with gas. You know, we're not trying to hide it somewhere, you know." And we told them, you know, "Sell it for what you can. We'll pay the difference when we can." And y'all taught me how to do that here. You know, so Wendell had a hard time finding a job. And, you know, it was just real stressful. And one day he come in and his arms all burn up because he was trying to work. And he said, "Honey," he said, if I write it down, will you put my resume on the that web thing?" I go, "Sure." And that's what we did. And a place in Idaho picked him up. The very next day they picked him up, you know, and I, you know, we had been praying, because, you know, you just know there's time to do something else and you don't know quite what to do. And I don't jump off with my ideas anymore. And I'm asking God for direction. And me and Wendell are asking God to take us wherever he wants us to be. And he took us to Pocatello, Idaho. And I'm going to tell you, I'd seen it snow like 3 times my whole life. So when I'm getting ready to go there, I'm talking to a guy. I'm trying to get some meeting schedules and stuff like that. And I said, is there a place where I can sign up for snow driving lessons? He said, honey, he said, most of us just get in our car. I'd heard tell about people with time, because I'm 15 years sober at this time when we make that move, and about people with time moving and then they not do it right when they get there and then they wind up drunk. And I was real scared about that, because I have some very, I have some set ideas about what AA is and what it ain't. And so Wendell got me the number of two ladies from that area, and and I started calling these women, and I was telling them, I said, okay, I'm going to be there that day. I said, if I am not in a meeting in 1 week, I said, come get me, because I won't have sense enough to get there by myself. You know, and I got there to them meetings, and sure enough, they're doing it wrong. Golly, I hated it. I wanted to start a new meeting, and my sponsor said no. She said, how many meetings are in that area? And I told her, and she said, well, why don't you just go to add to one of those? So there was a women's meeting in the area, and I started going to that women's meeting, and I brought the carry the message, let it begin with me. You know, it was a recovery meeting, and it was for anybody and everybody, and you know, and I started sponsoring a little girl in that meeting, and I done what my sponsor done for me. I carried her through the big book. We went through the steps. I told her about respecting AA for what it was. We went through the traditions. We went through the concepts. We went through all of it. You know, and that meeting started to change because, you know, it was me and her against them, you know. And Debbie told me I couldn't tell them nothing unless they asked me. Now, that's hard for me because I got a lot of information you need to know. But you know what? That meeting started changing, and it was just amazing. They took a group conscience, and I'm one vote, and because I was sponsoring some women in that room, it was real important to me that when it was written vote, because I didn't want them to see my hand. I didn't want it to be that kind of a vote. Because I influence people whether I know it or not. Sometimes even things I say from here, I got to be real careful, because some people think it's AA and it's my opinion, and I need to be real clear on what's what. So, you know, we done a written vote, and we were having a hard time deciding about that, but the women from the prison were coming down, and if it wasn't made a group, they couldn't come, and that was a deciding factor in that. You know, and that meeting is awesome. It is awesome. Those women in there, they're all ages and shapes and sizes, and I'll tell you what, they have shown me how to stay sober in Idaho. You know, I had a hard time. I cried every day for about a month, and it was like God gave me a thing, you know, it took the blanket off my head, you know. It was kind of like it come to me. I'm just in France driving on the wrong side of the road. I'm still in a car, you know, but everything in the car is different, you know, and that was my moment of clarity for that. And I just started to learn how to drive on the wrong side of the road. And I'm going to tell you what, when I go back to Georgia now, they're doing it wrong. You know, and Idaho has been a blessing for me and Wendell. I mean, it's like God opened up the fairy tale book and threw both of us in it and slammed it shut and said, have a good time. And we have. My mother got real sick, and now my mother and I, you know, when I made my amends to her, she said, honey, I just wanted you happy. That's all I ever wanted. So every phone call, I made a commitment to her, to myself and to my sponsor, that I would call her every week and check on her, and she would hear me happy. And I did that many years. And then she got sick, and she couldn't take care of the house by herself and all that. And I said, well, why don't you come out here and stay with us? It's just me and my husband. We don't have any kids. And I don't know, because we hadn't lived under the same roof since I was 13. You know, she told me, I said she kicked me out. She said that I left. She told me I couldn't drink in her house, so she kicked me out. I didn't get that little piece of information until I was sponsoring a girl, and we were sitting there talking to my mother about that, and she cleared that up for me. Damn sponsees. But so she thought about it, and she packed up her suitcase, and she came out, and she lived with us, and I had an opportunity to be a kind, loving daughter to her. And I done that one day at a time, and she loved my husband more than she does me. And you know, today that's okay. I used to be real jealous of that, but not anymore. You know, because I've been married to guys she wouldn't even let in her house. You know, so this is different, and this is better. And, you know, and I was able to do for my mother. I was absolutely able to do for my mother. And my husband, 3 years ago, he had a stroke, and my world come crashing down because, you know, strokes for old people, you know. Well, I'm 50. I am the age that I used to think was way over the hill, and I'm going to tell you, it's not quite that old anymore. I could so relate to what June said last night about coming here old, because I did that, and I'm not as old today as I was the day I got here with you. And I'm grateful for that. So I've younged up here. And people can't believe how much time I got. And they ask me when I got sober, and I lie and I tell them I was 12. Then I straighten it up, of course. But Mama's in the house with us, and Wendell has a stroke. And, you know, my world's just crashing down. Because, until something happens to what you have, you don't realize how important what you have is. Or that's been my experience. And Wendell has been a rock for me. And, you know, with his stroke, I had to learn how to love a new guy. Because the old guy, he's gone, you know. And my mother was able to teach him how to read, because he had to learn how to read all over again, you know. See Dick and Jane Run, you know, all those first grade books and the first grade math and all that kind of stuff. And my husband was so well read, he could talk to anybody and know what they were talking about if they used words this long. And I used to always pick at him about, you know, having that head full of useless information, you know, and today I don't pick at him about that anymore because he don't have it. And today I know bigger words than him. And some days it's funny and some days it just breaks my heart because I've had to learn how to love somebody new here. And, you know, it's hard because he's not the man that I married. And, you know, I had to get rid of an old idea. One more time, old ideas. And one more time, it has to begin with me. And because he can't change. I mean, he's trying, you know, and he's a lot better than he ever was. But I mean, he's different. But my mother was able to teach him how to read. And after that stroke, and y'all brought a meeting into the house, and my mama was able to sit in on it, and she saw the love that y'all had for us in Idaho. And she said, after everybody left, she said, "Honey, I ain't never been to a church with that kind of feeling in it, you know." So you impressed her by doing that. She got sick. I was out of state with work, and she got sick. And Wendell said, "Honey, you better come home," and she died. And I was able to be in the room when she took her last breath. And y'all gave me that. You know, and because of this process, when I was sitting there holding her hand, there wasn't, "Mama, I wished I'd have done. Mama, I wished I'd have said." You know, because all that had been said and done. You know, because y'all showed me how to be a kind, loving daughter, I was able to do that. My brothers come in from the funeral, and, you know, all of them was just, they were real impressed that we just loved her and took care of her like we did. And, you know, after the funeral, they went to my home group with me, and y'all just swooped them up too, you know. And they're not alcoholic, you know, not any of that. That was a couple of years ago. And Thursday, I talked to my oldest brother, and his son just got out of prison, you know, drinking and drugs. And I was talking to him about getting Shannon into some meetings and stuff. And I said, "Ed, if you go with him, you'll be impressed." He said, "Honey, I was that day I went with you." And I just cried. I just cried. Because, see, carrying the message, and I don't even know who I'm touching, you know. I got this job in Idaho, and I work for a manufacturing company, and they had to do a background check on me, and I never had one of those done. And I'm scared, because what if I forgot something, right? And I really want this job because I'm having a hard time finding it. And I have to confess to the temporary agent lady, you know. You know, I said, "Okay, if you find something, you need to let me know what it is, because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm trying to clean up my past. And, you know, don't forget about the job. Just let me know whatever you find. If it's not, you know, if it don't look good, let me know." Of course, she didn't find anything after I confessed. But I start work at this company, and, you know, and I love being there, and I love the people, and I'm excited and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know why, but I get to asked to speak, you know, 5 or 6 times a year. So I got my little list in. I got to go talk to this boss, this owner of the company, about time off. And I'd heard the tales about, you know, letting people know you're in AA and how it screws you forever and all that. And, you know, that has not been my experience. But I go in there and I said, "I need to talk to you about some time off." He said, "Well, how much time off do you need?" I said, "Well, a day occasionally." And I said, "I need these days off." And he's looking at all this kind of stuff, you know, and I'm traveling all over the United States. And he said, Sandy, what is this for? I said, well, I said, it's for a nonprofit organization. I trust God, but not quite enough, right? So he pushes it. He said, what nonprofit? So I say that prayer. I said, okay, God, I'm going to be honest, and here goes, I'm in your hands. And I said, Frank, I'm an alcoholic. And because of my gift of gab or whatever, I get asked to speak at conferences. And that's what these are for. And he pushed his seat back and he just sat quiet. I said, oh, shit, here we go. I'm done. And he said, honey, we just make baubles here. He said, you go and you do with my blessing. And it was like a company meeting, you know, with all the bosses and everything the next day. And he went down there and broke my anonymity to all them and told them that I was an alcoholic and I spoke at conferences and he was going to support me and they were too. You know, so, okay. He has come by my desk and he said, honey, just go do what you do. I said, what? He said, so-and-so is having trouble with drinking their son. Go do what you do. Okay, so I went and done what I did. It's 12-step those people, and we do a show in Las Vegas every year, and for the last 3 or 4 years, I've been going down to a meeting on Thursday. I asked him, I said, can I go down early? You know, I want to go to a meeting down there, and then, because it's a long show, it's like a week, and, you know, we always entertaining people, and there's a lot of drinking and long days and all that kind of stuff. He said, oh, yeah, not a problem. And after a couple of years, I was asked to speak down there at that meeting, and I mentioned that to Frank. I said, you know, I'm going to be speaking at this meeting, and he said, can I come? I said, okay, Frank, now here's the deal. You're going to know more about me than you ever need to know, okay? And you just need to be aware of that because it's like a testimonial, and I get honest. And Frank used to always laugh at me. He said, Sandy, how you doing today? I said, Frank, I am great. He said, you ever had a bad day? And I said, Frank, I've had bad days, and this ain't it. You know, this ain't it. This is far from my bad days. And so him and his wife sat front row that day at that meeting where I shared. And, you know, and I was real, I wasn't that fearful because Frank knew me. He knew who I am today. He didn't know the woman I was talking about from the podium. And you know, we went out to dinner afterwards, and he was just impressed with you. He couldn't believe, he saw a meeting schedule, and he couldn't believe all the volunteers that it requires to do these meetings, and he couldn't believe that none of y'all got paid to set up a meeting, and he just couldn't believe this snaggletooth guy sitting over here beside us, you know, shaking it out, and that, you know, everybody was kind and loving to him, and, you know, he felt what we have here that you can't describe, and that is unconditional love for a suffering alcoholic. That's what he felt. And you know what? He has not judged me behind that. He is always, you know, when we go to that show, he said, you're going in Thursday, right, for that meeting, right? I go, yeah. I said, do you want to go with me? You know, and sometimes he's been with me to that meeting. And, you know, he's just impressed with you. And as a result of that, his best friend is bad alcoholic. I was able to 12-step him with his best friend, 12-step the wife of the best friend, you know, and Frank talks to me today, you know, he says, you get life. I said, no, actually I don't. That's the reason I have to keep going to those meetings. But, you know, I know God's going to make everything okay. And, I have had a resentment the last couple of years that has just been tearing my britches. I am not kidding. It's just been tearing me up. And it's not somebody outside the program, it's somebody inside the program, you know. And I know y'all don't do that here, but, you know, I'm still sick and I need to keep coming back. And, I mean, this resentment, I have wrote over it. I've talked to my sponsor about it. I just can't get over my big bad self with it. And, you know, it's them doing to me, which is crap, and we know that. But, and they moved, and I was so grateful when they moved. Now I don't have to worry about them coming in my meetings, and lo and behold, Sunday before last, there they sit. They back in the meetings. Crap. You know, I just wish they'd fall in a hole, you know. Just not get drunk, not die, just fall in a hole and disappear, you know. And so I'm praying to God. I'm going, you know what, I have done everything I know to do about this, and I just can't take this anymore. I mean, I am just wore out with it. You're going to have to make this. You do whatever you do with this. I'm done. And I'll be damned. The next day, I got a phone call from this member. Want to make amends to me. You know, I'm always amazed when God knows that I am in absolute desperation. My prayer comes in an instant. You know, and so we made the amends and walk away. And, you know, I don't walk away free because I'm confessing to y'all, okay? I don't walk away free because she said she was going to do this, so we'll see. So I need to keep coming back. I know. I asked my sponsor about doing this before I did this weekend. She said, honey, they need to know you're human. I said, well, after this, they're going to know. So I sat in the meetings and I waited to see if they were going to do what they did. And they didn't. And I'm sitting there and I'm pissed off. I am mad. You know, and that was Monday night, okay? I mean, not 2 years ago, not 20 years ago. This was Monday night, okay? And I've been pissed off all week. So I come here, and what does this say? Carry the message, let it begin with me. So guess what I got to do? Not her, me. I got to get up Monday and walk across that stupid floor, stick my hand out, and welcome that alcoholic. You know, and through all this, I realized that I don't have a choice. Because I'm not wanting to go to that meeting ever again. And I mean, that's my meeting, right? And I don't want to go. I hate telling y'all this. But here, my life depends on this. I don't know whether hers does or not. Mine does. And I have to carry the action. I don't care. The big book says, everybody talks about, I love this program. Well, I hate it until I get the results. The big book talks about... I'm being honest, okay? The big book talks about we got to disregard the other person involved entirely. Not on Monday, not on Sunday night, not sometimes, not for a month, entirely. God, I hate that part. You know, where were we wrong? What was our part? You know, I'm not quoting it, but, you know, and that's what I had to look at. You know, so my part is I got to get out of that chair, walk across that room, stick my hand out so I can sit in that meeting free. Y'all have shown me how to do that. Today I don't have to get the gun. Today I don't have to quit going to meetings. Today I don't have to badmouth her, you know, because she's a sick alcoholic too. And that woman has taught me more lessons than I will today than I am even aware of. You know, but I know what I need to do on Monday. I'm not going to tell y'all I'm going to like doing that. I'm not going to lie. But I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to like the results when I do. Y'all have given me that. God just shut me up. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I'm grateful. Thank you.
You've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.